You're listening to one in a series of podcasts from the 2009 High Ed Web Conference in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
All right. My name is Joel Patterson. I work for the William & Mary Web team. We are, I'll talk a little bit about what we do, just in a few minutes on that. I'm going to show you a few things about how we've used photography in our site and also in social media. But most of this really is going to be kind of, you know, of showing you Photoshop tips and techniques and things like that. So I want to give you an idea of what we're going to do today. Our team is about seven people. We work in IT, but we support the top-level William & Mary web presence. And we do the technology. We also do the photography and the content development and the social media and social networking and some video, a little bit of video. We also provide support to all of our decentralized web editors. The entire university, all of our academic and administrative departments, as well as our graduate professional schools, are using a single content management system and a single design suite. And I'm going to show you some of that and how the photography comes into that. So we have about 600 decentralized web editors at our campus. They are all using the same tool, so supporting them actually isn't as difficult as it might be. So that's just a little bit about William & Mary and what our setup is at the web at William & Mary. And let's go ahead and look at some of our sites. I have to sit down to do this, I think. This is the William & Mary homepage, if you've never looked at it. Pretty standard large image in, little weak caption. Some of the other things that we do that are perhaps a little more interesting and different is we have every academic department has its own set of banner photos. We have about 40 arts and sciences departments at our school, and they all have probably anywhere between 8 and 15 photos that cycle through these banners randomly. And this is a photo that actually came from the geology department. They took it on one of their trips. So some of them are things that we actually pulled from the department. Some of them, this is our American Studies department, are just kind of iconic images that have to do with the department. So this was something we kind of dreamed up when we were redeveloping the William & Mary website. And at first, you know, there was some kind of pushback. Faculty were concerned about these photos. But as we kind of went through the process, we worked very collaboratively with the departments, asking them for photos, asking them for ideas. And I think in the end, all of them were very appreciative of the fact that they were getting quality photography delivered to them for free, because it's something I think a lot of people struggle with. So that's kind of our the undergraduate and the university level web presence. This is an example of one of our graduate professional schools. Also, you know, so you can see it's a very similar design to the college, but this is our School of Marine Science, obviously, so hopefully kind of has their flavor in there. Another place we've used photography is in news stories. Obviously, our news and events folks, we don't manage the news and events. Our university relations department does that. But they have a campus photographer who works for them, and he's also worked closely with us. So they have a lot of great photography. This is a story about using our new school business that was just dedicated. And you can see we have these scrolling photo sets, which is just a JavaScript photo set scroll through here. And it kind of flies back to the beginning at the end. So this is an example of how we've used it on news and events pages, and also on our graduate professional schools. So this is the School of Business, and they have a very similar functionality. It's kind of skinned to look like the School of Business, but they have a very similar thing. So we're all kind of playing in the same sandbox in terms of both design, technology, and photography. We're all using very similar things. Something else we've done recently, we started this in January of this year, is we started a Flickr account for the university. And we just kind of put up all kinds of things up there. We just had Busch Gardens Day on our campus, where people can go to Busch Gardens Amusement Park and put up some photos of roller coasters, more photos of the business dedication. And we've had it's starting to take off. We started this in January of 2009. We've had 63,000 views so far on this. So it's starting to build up our Flickr following. We're starting to get comments and favorites. It took a while to kind of get people into the community part of it. But it's starting to really take off, I think. And we've also helped this by posting these in Facebook. So you'll have a William & Mary Facebook account. We'll post the link to one of these, and we post the link to this photo. And that's probably not going
to. Have you even contributed to this student's alumni staff?
Yes, there is an email address where you can email photos, and we do obviously moderate them and select which ones appear on Flickr. But yeah, people can submit to Flickr. So they do that through the campus portal. And then we're also using Flickr in our galleries. We have Flash galleries, but we've started using a Flickr gallery, where we actually just pull in, hopefully, we pull in Flickr onto the William & Mary web hosts. And this is technologically pretty easy to do. You know, Flickr resizes all the images for you on demand, so you don't have to worry about creating all the thumbnails and all the things that go along with that. It's also, you can just click over to Flickr if you want to, like, comment on this, or, I'm sorry, this is not loading. Well, I think this is too much for it right now. Anyway, this is kind of the direction we're going with photography, I think, is trying to pull these not only into Fitbit, but pull them into the William & Mary web presence, WM.edu. And we also have the campus portal, and people can see Flickr from inside the campus portal, and this is where they submit photography. And as you saw on Flickr, we just started a fall photo contest. We're trying to get people to submit photos of Halloween. Halloween's really big on our campus. We have all these statues. People dress them up. Last year it was the Wizard of Oz. All the statues were dressed up as characters from the Wizard of Oz on campus. So we're trying to get students to kind of submit fun things that we could put on our homepage. All right, I'm not going to make you wait on this stuff. So let's go ahead and get into Photoshop. That's what we're here for. First, I wanted to do a quick poll. How many people here consider themselves like a beginner with Photoshop? Okay, intermediate? Any expert users? Okay. I'm going to do a couple quick polls like that throughout the session just because I don't want to insult anyone's intelligence by lecturing you about basic stuff, but I also don't want to skip over something that might be helpful. The first thing we're going to work on is Adobe Camera Raw. Camera Raw is a plugin that was originally built to edit raw photos taken with like a high-end DSLR camera. But starting with CS3 and in CS4, you can actually open JPEG images with Camera Raw. And there's a lot of really cool features in that plugin that are... you can do the same thing in Photoshop using all kinds of techniques. Of course, there's hundreds of ways to do things in Photoshop. But this is... I'm sorry. This one is included in Photoshop. It was developed by Adobe. That you can also buy them. Normally buy them. Some are downloads. Yes. I'm sorry.
I had to download
Camera Raw?
Yeah.
Are you using CS3 or CS4? Extended? Okay. So I guess it depends on your experience. I haven't had a problem with it on this. To open something with Camera Raw, you can't just double-click on it. It'll open in Photoshop by default. You have to actually go to File, Open in Photoshop, click on the photo, and then from this pop-up menu, it's normally going to default to JPEG. You have to select Camera Raw. And this takes you into Camera Raw. When I'm done with Camera Raw, I hit Open Image, and it takes me to Photoshop, and I can do all the things I would normally do in Photoshop. So this is kind of a pre-processing tool. You can kind of go into this, kind of fix your colors, fix your lighting, and then go into Photoshop and do all the little tweaking that you would normally do in Photoshop. So this is just, I'm just going to show you some basic things with this photo. Probably most people are familiar with the concept of exposure. You know, the brighter you make something, the darker you make something. Of course, the problem is if the default exposure for this picture, you know, you can't see the bricks very well. So if you increase the exposure, tell you can see the bricks, you know, it looks like it's a window into heaven, you know, the white light coming out there. So, you know, this is a job for fill light. Fill light increases it brightens the darkest parts of your photo, and it does not affect the other pieces. So if I can increase the fill light actually all the way up to 100, and it just brightens those bits. That was awesome. All right, that's it, you know. recovery is the exact same thing in the opposite side. It darkens. So this would bring back some detail in the trees. It doesn't show very well in this photo. But it brings back the darkest part, not affecting the brightest part. So those two kind of work. They're kind of opposites of each other. But again, you can accomplish these things other ways, but not quite as easy as that. So now that I'm done, I just hit open image. You can see it just takes me into Photoshop. Oh, you can't see my toolbar. There we go. this takes me to Photoshop, now I can do whatever I want with this. So, do a few more things with Camera Raw. Again, these are all defaulting to Camera Raw because I've been practicing. So I would have to go Format, Camera Raw, to open this with Camera Raw. This is an aerial shot of our campus taken by, I think, the business school paid to take these. It's a pretty good shot, but it actually looks better on that screen than it does on my screen. It looks kind of brown on my screen. I'm going to go ahead and increase the fill light again a little bit just to brighten things up. Sometimes when you increase the fill light, you start to get noise or color distortion. A way to kind of edge that back is with this blacks tool. You know, so this will kind of deepen your colors, enrichen your colors without making the photo too dark. If you go too far, obviously, it does something nasty. And maybe bump up the saturation and the vibrance of the colors a little bit. Something else that's kind of cool you can do, you can see there's these different tabs here. You can actually go over to this tab called HSL Grayscale tab, and you can change the color balance. So you can make the yellows more green or more yellow. And you can also change the saturation of each color. So if you really want the greens to pop out, you know, you can do all these things. And again, it's just, there's lots of ways to accomplish these kinds of these jobs, but this is probably the easiest way I know of. Something else I want to talk about is this part down here. When you first use Camera Raw, it's going to default to Adobe RGB. When you save things for the web, the best way to save them is for sRGB. And if you the first time you use RAW, if you click on this and switch it to sRGB, it will save you a lot of pain. Trust me. Because what happens when you go to save for the web, it tends to distort the colors if this isn't on sRGB. So, open this image. And you can resize this image, you know, crop it, get it ready for the web. And I always use, when I save images for the web, I always use File, Save for Web and Devices. I save all images as JPEGs. You never want to save a big image as a ping or a GIF. You know, you're going to end up with a huge file size. So always use JPEG. And then you can use this quality slider here. And then you can slide, if you go to quality, you can slide back and forth on it. And compare it to the file size down here. So as you adjust the force inverse relationship, as you adjust the quality down, the file size goes down, as you take the quality up, the file size goes way up. And it previews it for you too, right here, as you're adjusting the quality. So you can see how much the image is going to degrade. So you can really get, kind of fine tune your images for the best quality versus file size, which is something, of course, that's important for the web. So I usually try to keep my images below 100 kilobytes or so. That's just, they don't need to be much bigger than that. This is a really big image. This was like a, you know, 5 megapixel image or something. So then you just say, this is a JPEG. And that's the end of it. All right. Let's skip to something else. Something else that Camera Raw can do that's really nice, similar to that fill light slider, is the vibrancy slider. If you want to increase the saturation, let's say you want these greens in the background to be greener, make it look like it's more, you know, kind of a nice forest. If you increase the saturation, what's going to happen is the person is going to turn really orange. It's really, you know, not a good thing. The vibrancy, I don't know if you can see, is increasing the saturation of the green. And if I go too far, it starts to affect the person, but I can go up to about 40. So there's 0, and there's 40. And you don't see much effect on her face. So vibrancy actually saturates all the colors except for skin tones. So it uses an algorithm to not saturate skin tone colors. All right, and then do all the normal things. All right, something else you can do. It's kind of fun. This is something that you can use with layers. Most people here are familiar with layers and understand how layers work in Photoshop. Yes? I see nodding. Okay. If you create a new layer, this is a way to kind of pop this sky, make the sky, you know, make the sky bluer, make the clouds pop out. Create a new layer. Use the gradient tool. Make sure it's set from black to transparent up here. There's all kinds of things you could do. You just want black to transparent. And create a gradient through the sky. I'm doing this on a new layer. And then if I change my blend mode to soft light, there's without the gradient, there's with the gradient. So, pretty quick way to just, you know, make the sky bluer, make the clouds kind of pop out of the sky a little bit. And sometimes you have to adjust the opacity of this layer. You know, it looks too blue, it doesn't look real. You have, kind of have to tone this down a little bit with the opacity. So, all right, here's another problem. We're going to start talking about putting text over top of images or logos over top of images. Probably many of us have been in this situation before, where someone sends us an image and then they send us a logo, and they say, can you just put this image on top of this logo? And the image looks something like that. You know, this isn't even that bad, but it has all this intricate detail in it. You know, you could get the magic wand, you could get in there and erase. But something that's really simple to do, if you double-click on this layer, and you go to this blend if section, if you option-click on the little triangles, it breaks them into two triangles. And you can just slide that away. And, you know, you kind of have to play with it to get the quality right. It depends on how high of a quality you need to go for. This doesn't always yield, like, the most professional looking results, but if you just need something, you know, kind of quick and dirty, or if you're going to shrink the image down in size where that some of that stuff's going to disappear. For instance, if I do this and then I size this image down by half, a lot of that jagged edges, well, actually that was pretty bad. I made a liar on myself. So in this case, that was not accurate. But if you just use this blend, so again, you just double click on the layer. And when you get there, it looks like this. Option click, and just slide them around. So, hopefully another quick tip for making your job go faster. Placing text over images, there's lots of different ways to do this. I want to talk a little bit about typography and like kerning, tracking, leading. Are people familiar with those terms? Raise your hands if you know what that stuff is, and you know how to adjust it in Photoshop already. She's nodding. All right. Well, I'll do this really quickly. It doesn't take long. Kerning is the spacing between letters. And if you have like this, you can see the space between the W and the E is a little unattractive. You know, there's too much space there. It doesn't look right. If you click right in there, and you just hit Option left arrow, it's going to move everything over. So it's a really quick way to just turn your thing. You can also select everything, and it'll adjust the letter spacing between all of them. Same thing, Option, left, and right arrow keys. And this also works for the vertical spacing. Option, up, and down. You just highlight everything, and then on your keyboard, you hold down the Option key and either hit up or you hit down. This is a little effect I like to use on our site sometimes. I'm going to create a new layer. Sure. No, I think command. Command and... Oh, I'm sorry. The question was...
Thank you.
The question was the key shortcuts on Mac versus PC. Command and control are the two on PC. So if I say command on a Mac, it's control on a PC. And is it what? Option, alt? So alt on a PC, option on a Mac. So we create a new layer. I'm going to fill it with white. I'm going to bring the opacity of the white down to about 78. And if you take the welcome, put it over top. This is another trick that you can use for all kinds of things. If you go to layer, or select,
load selection, it will create a selection around whatever layer I was on. So it loaded that, it created a selection around the welcome. And then I go back to the white layer, hit delete, deselect, and if I can throw away my text layer now. You kind of create this little cutout effect. Very, very easy. So create a layer, type the text, load the text as a selection, and then delete that selection from the original white layer. Does that make sense to everyone? All right, so make sure. This is another thing that actually would, I was thinking about this workshop. We've never used this on our site, but we really should. I don't know why we haven't. These are just some photos. These are not of our campus. These were taken in Seattle on a vacation I just took. My girlfriend actually took these. And she just stood up on top of a hill and did click, 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 click. No tripod, no nothing. And I don't know if any of you are familiar with this, the panoramic feature in CS4. You have to use Adobe Bridge. It comes with Photoshop. So you go into Bridge. You select the photos you want to create a panorama out of. Go to Tools, Photoshop, Photo Merge. And you have some different choices. I usually do the cylindrical. This takes just a moment. I did size these photos down so it won't take so long. If you're doing this with 10 megapixel photos, you can pretty much go get a cup of coffee or, you know, watch The Office while doing it. But hopefully it won't take too long today. But it definitely does it faster than you or I can do it, I think, in the result. Mm-hmm. Yep. It does. Because if you'll see, there were two, if you can see, you can't see it, there are two space needles. There were two different pictures with a space needle in it. As you can see, there's only one space needle. This is a space needle. So it just does a quick panorama. Yeah. You have to go into Bridge, which is a separate program, comes with Photoshop. Select the photos you want to use, Tools, Photoshop, Photo Merge. And then you have some choices. And of course you can just crop this really nicely. Whoops. And it looks like a panorama. I mean, this would have been great for our banner photos. We should have been doing this. I don't know why we didn't. and this is another one where the sky will can pop the sky. I really like this effect. I do it all the time. This was the sky effect again, where you create the gradient and switch the blend mode to soft light. So you do a black to transparent gradient on a new layer, and then you change the blend mode here to soft light, and you get these nice atmospheric effects going on over Seattle. Yes. Yes, I should have said that at the beginning. There are going to be notes. I do provide some links. I do provide some links to people who have helped me in different tutorials online that are free and some that cost money. And also, I guess there's a podcast of this, so you won't be able to see what I'm doing, but I guess maybe you can figure out the key commands or something from the podcast if there's something that's not in the notes. So, all right. Let's see what else we have time for. This is something I got from somebody else. The amazing Julianne Kost is the digital image evangelist for Adobe. She's great. She goes around teaching Photoshop around the country. So let's say you want to turn a photo black and white. Well, this is a picture of the building on campus. Let's say we want to turn this picture black and white. Of course, there's tons of different ways you can do it, and they all yield different effects. So if you're trying to go for kind of an artsy effect, there's this tool she developed, and you can get it free, and I do provide the link to this, where it shows you all the different ways Photoshop can turn something black and white. So I go to the Move tool, make sure I'm on Auto Select Layer, click on the first layer, the color layer, These are all smart objects. I don't know if you're familiar with smart objects, but if you just click on that photo and say replace content, choose your content, and it takes a moment, but then it will preview for you all the different ways that photo can be turned black and white in Photoshop. So you can see there's a lot of different effects. There's, you know, ones where the brick is very prominent, one where the window is very prominent. Let's say I like this one the most. Click on that, and then I just take this filter and drop it on top of this. And you have a black and white image. So that's a really cool tool that she developed. It's called BW Ring Around. right, very intuitive. Very intuitive. But I do have a link to that at the end. Yes, you click on the one you want. You have auto select layer chosen up here at the top.
Yeah.
You click on the image you want, and then it highlights that one, and you grab that one. So that's kind of a nice way to go black and white there. All right, here's a photo that was taken. This is also of the Wren Building at William & Mary. This one, you know, it's not a great photo. It's got kind of a... I'm actually going to brighten it up. Oh, no, I'm not. It's got kind of a nasty color cast. You know, this guy's kind of a grayish brown there. Doesn't look too good. But there might be something cool we can do with this, with, again, using blend modes and texture overlays. This is a texture I bought from iStockPhoto.com. I think I paid $3 for it. I sharpened it up. You put this over this image. And then we just changed the blend mode to see what we can get. Now, you can go through these one by one like this, but there's a faster way. If you're on the Move tool, you can hit Shift on your keyboard and then plus, and it will step you through each one of these. And so you can just kind of cycle through the blend modes and see, try to find something that looks good. So, you know, I kind of like that one. Kind of a cool texture to it. This isn't something you would use every day, but there might be something you could use this for. Again, you might want to have to take the opacity down if it's too much. And then we can also add this. Key command. I guess everyone familiar with the idea of non-destructive editing? I'm sorry, quick question. Hold down the shift key and then plus key. Shift plus, and shift minus goes backwards the other way. Non-destructive editing is just the idea that you never want to do anything that you can't undo, essentially. You never want to mess with your original. So here I have two layers. To do the effect I want to do, I have to combine my layers. So I could go to Image, or I could go to... Is it Image? Layer. I'm sorry, Layer and Flatten Image. But that would be a destructive thing. If you hold down Command, Option, Shift, E... that one you're going to have to write down. Or I guess it would be Control, Alt, Shift, E on a Windows machine. It creates a new layer on top that combines all these layers and doesn't affect the layers below. So Command, Option, Shift, E. Then I can drag this over here. And if you Option click between, Alt click on PC, it will clip it to that size. And you can drag this around and say, okay, I want that. You know, I want to see the weather vane. And then once again, we can use the blend modes to step through, actually kind of like that. So, again, this isn't something you would necessarily use every day, but it's kind of a cool effect that you might be able to use with a photo that otherwise you probably wouldn't use this photo anyway on a site just because of the color cast. All right. Oops. This is the photo I used for the fall photo contest. I don't know how many of you already know a lot about blend modes. This is something else cool you can do with blend modes. I'm just going to duplicate the background layer. And then you know all these crazy filters that you think, I would never ever use that in a million years. Like, why would I want a pumpkin that looks like this, you know? If you hit OK, and again, if you change the blend modes, you might find something kind of interesting. You know, there's kind of an interesting effect if you look, you know. You know, it's kind of a nice way to experiment with some of these filters where you've thought, like, why would I ever want to invert everything and make it all gray and purple and green? you know, if you use these blend modes, you can actually get some really cool effects on your images just by kind of changing things around. Right. This will show you a few more quick things about Camera Raw, and maybe questions if there are any. Something else in Camera Raw, there is this lens correction. This, you're not really going to be able to see this on the monitor, but if you are camera correct, no, lens correction. If you know, some photos often have that purple edging sometimes around like the trees. If you've got trees against the sky and then there's this little purple edging around it, this tool can help defringe that type of stuff. These sliders, if you're ever in that situation, you can use these sliders in Camera Raw under lens correction, kind of get rid of some of that. You can also get rid of lens vignetting, or you can actually add lens vignetting. That's the black around the edges if you like lens vignetting. Sometimes it does add a kind of a nice effect to a photo. Or you can use it to get rid of lens vignetting. So those are some things under the lens correction tool in Camera Raw. One other quick thing I will show you. I should have said this at the beginning. Once you've exited Camera Raw and gone into Photoshop, you can't go back under normal circumstances. So you're done in Camera Raw with this image. You can go back and do the whole thing over again. But if you start editing this and putting layers on top of it and all this, and then you decide, oh, I really want to edit that original layer, you can't just pop back into Camera Raw and do that. What you can do, though, is when you open something... with Camera Raw. You can hold down the Shift key and you get this. This changes to Open Object. And this opens it as a smart object. I don't know if you're familiar with smart objects. I can't do the normal things I could do with a Photoshop layer, so I cannot paint on this layer because it's a smart object. It's not a normal Photoshop layer. It says, you know, you have to rasterize this layer in order to use it. But what I can do is double click on this and go back to Raw, if it's a smart object. So if you're going to bring this in and start putting layers on top of it and then think, oh, you know, that I wish I'd made that bottom layer a little brighter, I wish I could go back to Camera Raw, you might want to open these things as objects. You can always rasterize the layer later, turn it into a normal Photoshop layer, and start editing on it. So that's just a quick, I guess, word of caution about Camera Raw is it's kind of a one-shot deal unless you want to start over. Shift gets open object. Mm-hmm. So I think we have about 10 minutes left or so. I don't know if there's any questions or thoughts. Or go ahead.
I don't know if you do it or not, but how many? So I've seen like where photographers have taken like say three different shots and different color spectrums of the same image and put them together.
Oh, you might be able to do, in other words, like use Camera Raw or some other tool in photo, I'm sorry, the question was, how do you, you've seen these merged images where you take three different photos and you take out kind of the tonal qualities from all three and combine them, and that's how you get like these beautiful exposed, you know, desert floor and the blue sky, sunset above, and everything's just like perfectly exposed, and it does look kind of CG. So how do you do that, and can you do that without having the three images, or five images, or however many it takes? I guess you could edit them either with RAW or some other tool in Photoshop, expose them differently, and then combine them together. And you can do that with Bridge. It's under Tools, Photoshop, Merge to HDR. That's called HDR, that effect. This is not a great tool for doing that, HDR. There's actually other tools you can buy for about $100 that are going to give you much better results. And the idea, if you want to do that, is you take five different images with the same aperture setting, but different... time value settings on the camera. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's how you would do it. You take five different photos, same aperture, and then you merge to HDR.
What about
mm-hmm. I can't picture what effect you're talking about, I guess, so. Yeah, that's the other thing, is a lot of those sometimes, it goes back to the question at the beginning, the question was, you know, about black and white photography and looking really sharp. A lot of those things are sometimes done with filters that you buy or plugins that you buy. There's probably a way to do it without the plugin, but the plugin makes it go like this as opposed to the sweat of your brow. Any other thoughts or anyone have any tips?
Favorite silhouetting drop shadow?
My favorite silhouetting? Do you just want to drop shadow behind a layer?
You know, you have a button or
There's a couple different ways you could do a shadow, I guess. Let's see if I've got. Hang on, sorry. I mean, there's the tool. I mean, really with the FX tool. I mean, there's a different ways. I'm just going to do something really boring because I don't have a lot of time. I've seen this done where you duplicate the layer, bring it down kind of like this. I'll do a color overlay on it to make it gray. And then you do, I think it's Gaussian blur. And of course, the shadow needs to go behind the object. Casting a shadow. Yeah. So that's one little quick tool. Creating shadows, that one doesn't look quite right. Too big. But you're looking more for the actual drop shadow. I mean, I always just use this.
Yeah,
yeah, that's always what I use for that. Is just play with this. Yeah. Something else we do. I would use blend mode sometimes to, if you've got an image where the text isn't showing up very well. For instance, if you remember our site at the beginning. But we have a lot of white text over top of photos, which can be very tricky. So sometimes you can create a gradient background or use a brush to create like a black swatch behind where the text is going to go, and then switch the blend mode so it kind of blends in with the photo. And when you put the text on top of it, you really can't see the fact that it's darker in that spot, but the text shows up better. So that's, you know, kind of using the same tool, but. I don't use channels very often. I mean, I know a lot of people do use channels, but I don't use them very often. Yeah. Are you familiar with the Magic Selection tool?
Yeah.
Okay. Trying to think if there's anything else. Oh, I'm sorry. The question was cutting people out and putting them on a different background. We don't put them on a different background. We do this on our homepage. I normally use the quick selection tool. If you start with it's going to make me sound floppy, but it's kind of what I do. If you start with a 10 megapixel image and you use the quick selection tool and then you size it down to, you know, 100 by 100, it actually looks pretty good. So you do. You don't actually have to go through and erase every little pixel across the edges. I mean, that's kind of the nice thing about web, if you're a web, is, you know, you don't have to worry about printing it, you know, this big, and people can see every pixel. So I just use the quick selection tool, erase the worst of it, size it down, and see how it looks.
Could you save it off as a JPEG and then bring it up to the camera raw and use that as lens correction?
Yeah, you probably could. That usually, the lens correction really focuses on cyan and green, because those are the colors that often you see with the lens correction, is when you have a cyan or a green fringe. So it really focuses on those two colors. Just a quick, since we're running out of time, this is a few things. This is a free site. There's lots of video tutorials on here. I really like this guy. This is Julian Koch, who I was talking about, who works for Adobe. And this is the URL for that black and white ring around the rosy thing I showed you. I'm not affiliated. I'm a member of the National Association of Photoshop Professionals. I don't work for them. I pay them. They don't pay me. So I'm not like plugging for them. But they've taught me a lot of stuff I've really enjoyed. They do a conference every year. They also do one-day conferences all around the country that usually cost around $100. And you can learn a whole lot of stuff from them. And this is Kelby Training is affiliated with them as well. And if you give me about 20 minutes after the presentation, I'm going to have my notes posted online. And there will be a podcast as well, I understand, from who you are, or from Hired Web. So, I'm sorry? This link right here, joelpatterson.com/photoshop.pdf. Thank you all very much.